Carter sat nearby at the top of a sand dune, looking despondent and holding... Was that Muffin in his lap? Amos appeared much as he had when we last saw him ages ago. He wore his blue suit with matching coat and fedora. His long hair was neatly braided, and his round glasses glinted in the sun. He appeared fresh and rested, not like someone who'd been the prisoner of Set. How did you...
Get away from Set?
His expression darkened.
I was a fool to go looking for him, Sadie. I had no idea how powerful he'd become. His spirit is tied to the Red Pyramid.
So he doesn't have a human host? Amos shook his head.
He doesn't need one as long as he has the pyramid. As it gets closer to completion, he gets stronger and stronger. I sneaked into his lair under the mountain and walked right into a trap. I'm ashamed to say he took me without a fight.
He gestured at his suit, showing off how perfectly fine he was.
Not a scratch, just bam! I was frozen like a statue. Set stood me outside his pyramid like a trophy and let his demons laugh and mock me as they passed by.
"Did you see Dad?" I asked. His shoulders slumped.
"I heard the demons talking. The coffin is inside the pyramid. They're planning to use Osiris's power to augment the storm. When Set unleashes it at sunrise, and it will be quite an explosion, Osiris and your father will be obliterated. Osiris will be exiled so deep into the Duat he may never rise again."
My head began to throb. I couldn't believe we had so little time. And if Amos couldn't save Dad, how could Carter and I? "But you got away," I said, grasping for any good news. "So there must be weaknesses in his defenses, or..."
"The magic that froze me eventually began to weaken. I concentrated my energy and worked my way out of the binding. It took many hours, but finally I broke free. I sneaked out at midday when the demons were sleeping. It was much too easy."
"It doesn't sound easy," I said. Amos shook his head, obviously troubled.
"Set allowed me to escape. I don't know why, but I shouldn't be alive. It's a trick of some sort, I'm afraid."
Whatever he was going to say, he changed his mind.
"At any rate, my first thought was to find you, so I summoned my boat."
He gestured behind him. I managed to lift my head and saw we were in a strange desert of white dunes that stretched as far as I could see in the starlight. The sand under my fingers was so fine and white it might have been sugar. Amos's boat, the same one that had carried us from the Thames to Brooklyn, was beached at the top of a nearby dune, canted at a precarious angle, as if it had been thrown there.
"There's a supply locker aboard," Amos offered, "if you'd like fresh clothes."
"But where are we?"
"White Sands," Carter told me. "In New Mexico. It's a government range for testing missiles. Amos said no one would look for us here, so we gave you some time to heal. It's about 7 in the evening, still the 28th. 12 hours or so until Set, you know."
"But..." Too many questions swam round in my mind. The last thing I remembered, I'd been at the river talking to Nephthys. Her voice had seemed to come from the other side of the world. She'd spoken faintly through the current, so hard to understand, yet quite insistent. She'd told me she was sheltered far away in a sleeping host, which I couldn't make sense of. She'd said she could not appear in person, but that she would send a message. Then the water had started to boil.
"We were attacked."
Carter stroked Muffin's head, and I finally noticed that the amulet, Bast's amulet, was missing.
"Sadie, I've got some bad news."
He told me what had happened, and I closed my eyes. I started to weep. Embarrassing, yes, but I couldn't help it. Over the last few days, I'd lost everything. My home, my ordinary life, my father. I'd been almost killed half a dozen times. My mother's death, which I'd never gotten over to begin with, hurt like a reopened wound. And now Bast was gone too? When Anubis had questioned me in the underworld, he'd wanted to know what I would sacrifice to save the world. What haven't I sacrificed already? I wanted to scream. What have I got left? Carter came over and gave me Muffin, who purred in my arms, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't fast. "She'll come back, won't she?" I looked at Amos imploringly. "I mean, she's immortal, isn't she?" Amos tugged at the rim of his hat.
"Sadie, I just don't know. It seems she sacrificed herself to defeat Sobek. Bast forced him back to the Duat at the expense of her own life force. She even spared Muffin, her host, probably with the last shred of her power. If that's true, it would be very difficult for Bast to come back. Perhaps someday, in a few hundred years..."
"No, not a few hundred years! I can't..." My voice broke. Carter put his hand on my shoulder, and I knew he understood. We couldn't lose anyone else. We just couldn't.
"Rest now," Amos said. "We can spare another hour, but then we'll have to get moving."
Hufu offered me a bowl of his concoction. The chunky liquid looked like soup that had died long ago. I glanced at Amos, hoping he'd give me a pass, but he nodded encouragingly. Just my luck. On top of everything else, I had to take baboon medicine. I sipped the brew, which tasted almost as bad as it smelled, and immediately my eyelids felt heavy. I closed my eyes and slept. And just when I thought I had this soul-leaving-the-body business sorted, my soul decided to break the rules. Well, it is my soul, after all, so I suppose that makes sense. As my bar left my body, it kept its human form, which was better than the winged poultry look, but it kept growing and growing until I towered above White Sands. I'd been told many times that I have a lot of spirit, usually not as a compliment, but this was absurd. My bar was as tall as the Washington Monument. To the south, past miles and miles of desert, steam rose from the Rio Grande, the battle site where Bast and Sobek had perished. Even as tall as I was, I shouldn't have been able to see all the way to Texas, especially at night, but somehow I could. To the north, even farther away, I saw a distant red glow, and I knew it was the aura of Set. His power was growing as his pyramid neared completion. I looked down. Next to my foot was a tiny cluster of specks, our camp. Miniature Carter, Amos, and Hufu sat talking round the cooking fire. Amos's boat was no larger than my little toe. My own sleeping form lay curled in a blanket, so small I could have crushed myself with one misstep. I was enormous, and the world was small.
"That's how gods see things," a voice told me.
I looked around, but saw nothing. Just the vast expanse of rolling white dunes. Then, in front of me, the dunes shifted. I thought it was the wind, until an entire dune rolled sideways like a wave. Another moved, and another. I realized I was looking at a human form, an enormous man lying in the fetal position. He got up, shaking white sand everywhere. I knelt down and cupped my hands over my companions to keep them from getting buried. Oddly, they didn't seem to notice, as if the disruption were no more than a sprinkle of rain. The man rose to his full height, at least a head taller than my own giant form. His body was made of sand that curtained off his arms and chest like waterfalls of sugar. The sand shifted across his face until he formed a vague smile.
"Sadie Kane," he said, "I have been waiting for you."
Geb. Don't ask me how, but I knew instantly that this was the god of the earth. Maybe the sand body was a giveaway. "I have something for you." It didn't make sense that my bar would have the envelope, but I reached into my shimmering ghostly pocket and pulled out the note from Nut. "Your wife misses you," I said. Geb took the note gingerly. He held it to his face and seemed to sniff it. Then he opened the envelope. Instead of a letter, fireworks burst out. A new constellation blazed in the night sky above us, the face of Nut, formed by a thousand stars. The wind rose quickly and ripped the image apart, but Geb sighed contentedly. He closed the envelope and tucked it inside his sandy chest as if there were a pocket right where his heart should be.
"I owe you thanks, Sadie Kane," Geb said. "It has been many millennia since I saw the face of my beloved. Ask me a favor that the earth can grant, and it shall be yours."
"Save my father," I said immediately. Geb's face rippled with surprise.
What a loyal daughter. Isis could learn a thing from you. Alas, I cannot. Your father's path is twined with that of Osiris, and matters between the gods cannot be solved by the earth.
"Then I don't suppose you could collapse Set's mountain and destroy his pyramid?" I asked. Geb's laughter was like the world's largest sandshaker.
"I cannot intervene so directly between my children. Set is my son, too."
I almost stamped my foot in frustration. Then I remembered I was a giant and might smash the whole camp. Could a bar do that? Better not to find out. "Well, your favours aren't very useful, then." Geb shrugged, sloughing off a few tons of sand from his shoulders.
"Perhaps some advice to help you achieve what you desire. Go to the place of the crosses."
"And where is that?"
"Close,"
he promised.
"And, Sadie Kane, you are right. You have lost too much. Your family has suffered. I know what that is like. Just remember, a parent would do anything to save his children. I gave up my happiness, my wife. I took on the curse of Ra so that my children could be born."
He looked up at the sky wistfully.
"And while I miss my beloved more each millennium, I know neither of us would change our choice. I have 5 children whom I love."
"Even Set?" I asked incredulously. "He's about to destroy millions of people."
"Set is more than he appears," Geb said. "He is our flesh and blood."
"Not mine."
"No?"
Geb shifted, lowering himself. I thought he was crouching until I realized he was melting into the dunes.
"Think on it, Sadie Kane, and proceed with care. Danger awaits you at the place of crosses, but you will also find what you need most."
"Could you be a little more vague?" I grumbled. But Geb was gone, leaving only a taller-than-normal dune in the sands, and my bar sank back into my body. 32. The Place of Crosses. I woke with Muffin snuggled on my head, purring and chewing my hair. For a moment, I thought I was home. I used to wake with Muffin on my head all the time. Then I remembered I had no home, and Bast was gone. My eyes started tearing up again.
"No," Isis's voice chided. "We must stay focused."
For once, the goddess was right. I sat up and brushed the white sand off my face. Muffin meowed in protest, then waddled 2 steps and decided she could settle for my warm place on the blanket.
"Good, you're up," Amos said. "We were about to wake you."
It was still dark. Carter stood on the deck of the boat, pulling on a new linen coat from Amos's supply locker. Hufu loped over to me and made a purring sound at the cat. To my surprise, Muffin leaped into his arms.
"I've asked Hufu to take the cat back to Brooklyn," Amos said. "This is no place for her."
Hufu grunted, clearly unhappy with his assignment.
"I know, my old friend," Amos said.
His voice had a hard edge. He seemed to be asserting himself as the alpha baboon.
"It is for the best."
Hufu said, not meeting Amos's eyes. Unease crept over me. I remembered what Amos said, that his release might have been a trick of Set's, and Carter's vision. Set was hoping that Amos would lead us to the mountain so we could be captured. What if Set was influencing Amos somehow? I didn't like the idea of sending Hufu away. On the other hand, I didn't see much choice but to accept Amos's help, and seeing Hufu there holding Muffin, I couldn't bear the idea of putting either of them in danger. Maybe Amos had a point. Can he travel safely, I asked, out here all by himself?
Oh, yes,
Amos promised.
Hufu and all baboons have their own brand of magic. He'll be fine. And just in case...
He brought out a wax figurine of a crocodile.
This will help if the need arises.
I coughed. A crocodile? After what we just...
It's Philip of Macedonia,
Amos explained. Philip is wax?
Of course, Amos said. Real crocodiles are much too difficult to keep. And I did tell you he's magic.
Amos tossed the figurine to Hufu, who sniffed it, then stuffed it into a pouch with his cooking supplies. Hufu gave me one last nervous look, glanced fearfully at Amos, then ambled over the dune with his bag in one arm and Muffin in the other. I didn't see how they would survive out here, magic or no. I waited for Hufu to appear on the crest of the next dune, but he never did. He simply vanished.
Now then, Amos said. From what Carter has told me, Set means to unleash his destruction tomorrow at sunrise. That gives us very little time. What Carter would not explain is how you plan to destroy Set.
I glanced at Carter and saw warning in his eyes. I understood immediately and felt a flush of gratitude. Perhaps the boy wasn't completely thick. He shared my concerns about Amos. It's best we keep that to ourselves, I told Amos flatly. You said so yourself. What if Set attached a magic listening device to you or something? Amos's jaw tightened.
You're right, he said grudgingly. I can't trust myself. It's just... so frustrating.
He sounded truly anguished, which made me feel guilty. I was tempted to change my mind and tell him our plan, but one look at Carter, and I kept my resolve. We should head to Phoenix, I said. Perhaps along the way... I slipped my hand into my pocket. Nut's letter was gone. I wanted to tell Carter about my talk with the Earth God, Geb, but I didn't know if it was safe in front of Amos. Carter and I had been a team for so many days now, I realized that I resented Amos's presence a little. I didn't want to confide in anyone else. God, I can't believe I just said that. Carter spoke up. We should stop in Las Cruces. I'm not sure who was more surprised, Amos or me.
That's near here, Amos said slowly. But...
He picked up a handful of sand, murmured a spell, and threw the sand into the air. Instead of scattering, the grains floated and formed a wavering arrow pointing southwest toward a line of rugged mountains that made a dark silhouette against the horizon.
As I thought,
Amos said, and the sand fell to the earth.
Las Cruces is out of our way by 40 miles over those mountains. Phoenix is northwest.
40 miles isn't so bad, I said. Las Cruces... The name seemed strangely familiar to me, but I couldn't decide why. Carter, why there? I just... He looked so uncomfortable, I knew it must have something to do with Zia. I had a vision. A vision of loveliness, I ventured. He looked like he was trying to swallow a golf ball, which confirmed my suspicions. I just think we should go there, he said. We might find something important.
Too risky. Amos said, I can't allow it with the House of Life on your trail. We should stay in the wilderness, away from cities.
Then suddenly, click. My brain had one of those amazing moments when it actually works correctly. No, Carter's right, I said. We have to go there. It was my brother's turn to look surprised. I am? We do? Yes. I took the plunge and told them about my talk with Geb. Amos brushed some sand off his jacket.
That's interesting, Sadie, but I don't see how Las Cruces comes into play.
Because it's Spanish, isn't it? I said. Las Cruces, the crosses, just as Geb told me. Amos hesitated, then nodded reluctantly.
Get in the boat.
A bit short on water for a boat ride, aren't we? I asked, but I followed him on board. Amos took off his coat and uttered a magic word. Instantly the coat came to life, drifted to the stern, and grasped the tiller. Amos smiled at me, and some of that old twinkle came back into his eyes.
Who needs water
The boat shuddered and lifted into the sky. If Amos ever got tired of being a magician, he could have gotten a job as a skyboat tour operator. The vista coming over the mountains was quite stunning. At first, the desert had seemed barren and ugly to me compared to the lush greens of England, but I was starting to appreciate that the desert had its own stark beauty, especially at night. The mountains rose like dark islands in a sea of lights. I'd never seen so many stars above us, and the dry wind smelled of sage and pine. Las Cruces spread out in the valley below, a glowing patchwork of streets and neighbourhoods. As we got closer, I saw that most of the town was nothing very remarkable. It might have been Manchester or Swindon or any place, really, but Amos aimed our ship toward the south of the city, to an area that was obviously much older, with adobe buildings and tree-lined streets. As we descended, I began to get nervous. "Won't they notice us in a flying boat?" I asked. "I mean, I know magic is hard to see, but..."
"This is New Mexico," Amos said. "They see UFOs here all the time."
And with that, we landed on the roof of a small church. It was like dropping back in time, or onto a Wild West film set. The town square was lined with stucco buildings, like an Indian pueblo. The streets were brightly lit and crowded. It looked like a festival, with stall vendors selling strings of red peppers, Indian blankets, and other curios. An old stagecoach was parked next to a clump of cacti. In the plaza's bandstand, men with large guitars and loud voices played mariachi music.
"This is the historic area," Amos said. "I believe they call it Mesilla."
"Have a lot of Egyptian stuff here, do they?" I asked dubiously.
"Oh, the ancient cultures of Mexico have a lot in common with Egypt," Amos said, retrieving his coat from the stern rudder. "But that's a talk for another day."
"Thank God," I muttered. Then I sniffed the air and smelled something strange but wonderful, like baking bread and melting butter, only spicier, yummier. I am starving. It didn't take long, walking the plaza, to discover handmade tortillas. God, they were good. I suppose London has Mexican restaurants, we've got everything else, but I'd never been to one, and I doubt the tortillas would have tasted this heavenly. A large woman in a white dress rolled out balls of dough in her flour-caked hands, flattened and baked the tortillas on a hot skillet, and handed them to us on paper napkins. They didn't need butter or jam or anything. They were so delicate they just melted in my mouth. I made Amos pay for about a dozen just for me. Carter was enjoying himself too, until he tried the red chili tamales at another booth. I thought his face would explode. "Hot!" he announced. "Drink!"
"Eat more tortilla," Amos advised, trying not to laugh. "Bread cuts the heat better than water."
I tried the tamales myself and found they were excellent, not nearly as hot as a good curry. So Carter was just being a wimp, as usual. Soon we'd eaten our fill and began wandering the streets, looking for... well, I wasn't sure exactly. Time was a-wasting. The sun was going down, and I knew this would be the last night for all of us unless we stopped set, but I had no idea why Geb had sent me here. "You will also find what you need most." What did that mean? I scanned the crowds and caught a glimpse of a tall young guy with dark hair. A thrill went up my spine. Anubis? What if he was following me, making sure I was safe? What if he was what I needed most? Wonderful thought, except it wasn't Anubis. I scolded myself for thinking I could have luck that good. Besides, Carter had seen Anubis as a jackal-headed monster. Perhaps Anubis's appearance with me was just a trick to befuddle my brain, a trick that worked quite well. I was daydreaming about that, and about whether or not they had tortillas in the land of the dead, when I locked eyes with a girl across the plaza. "Carter!" I grabbed his arm and nodded in the direction of Zia Rashid. "Someone's here to see you." Zia was ready for battle in her loose black linen clothes, staff and wand in hand. Her dark, choppy hair was blown to one side like she'd flown here on a strong wind. Her amber eyes looked about as friendly as a jaguar's. Behind her was a vendor's table full of tourist souvenirs and a poster that read, New Mexico, Land of Enchantment. I doubted the vendor knew just how much enchantment was standing right in front of his merchandise.
You came,
Zia said, which seemed a bit on the obvious side. Was it my imagination, or was she looking at Amos with apprehension, even fear?
Yeah, Carter said nervously. You, remember Sadie, and this is...
Amos,
Zia said uneasily. Amos bowed.
Zia Rashid, it's been several years. I see Iskandar sent his best.
Zia looked as if he'd smacked her in the face, and I realized Amos hadn't heard the news. Amos, I said, Iskandar is dead. He stared at us in disbelief as we told him the story.
I see,
he said at last.
Then the new chief lector is...
Desjardins, I said.
Ah, bad news.
Zia frowned. Instead of addressing Amos, she turned to me.
Do not dismiss Desjardins. He is very powerful. You'll need his help, our help, to challenge Set.
Has it ever occurred to you, I said, that Desjardins might be helping Set? Zia glared at me.
Never. Others might, but not Desjardins.
Clearly she meant Amos. I suppose that should have made me even more suspicious of him, but instead I got angry. You're blind, I told Zia. Desjardins' first order as chief lector was to have us killed. He's trying to stop us, even though he knows Set is about to destroy the continent. And Desjardins was there that night at the British Museum. If Set needed a body, the top of Zia's staff burst into flame. Carter quickly moved between us.
Whoa, both of you just calm down. We're here to talk.
I am talking, Zia said. You need the House of Life on your side. You have to convince Desjardins you're not a threat.
By surrendering? I asked. No, thank you. I'd rather not be turned into a bug and squashed. Amos cleared his throat.
I'm afraid Sadie is right. Unless Desjardins has changed since I last saw him, he is not a man who will listen to reason.
Zia fumed.
Carter, could we speak in private?
He shifted from foot to foot. Look, Zia, I agree we need to work together. But if you're going to try to convince me to surrender to the house...
There's something I must tell you, she insisted. Something you need to know.
The way she said that made the hairs stand up on the back of my neck. Could this be what Geb meant? Was it possible that Zia held the key to defeating Set? Suddenly Amos tensed. He pulled his staff out of thin air and said, It's a trap! Zia looked stunned.
What? No!
Then we all saw what Amos had sensed. Marching toward us from the east end of the plaza was Desjardins himself. He wore cream-coloured robes with the chief lector's leopard-skin cape tied across his shoulders. His staff glowed purple. Tourists and pedestrians veered out of his way, confused and nervous, as if they weren't sure what was going on, but they knew enough to clear off. "Other way!" I urged. I turned and saw two more magicians in black robes marching in from the west. I pulled my wand and pointed it at Zia. "You set us up!"
"No, I swear!"
her face fell.
"Mel!" Mel must have told him.
Right, I grumbled. Blame Mel.
No time for explanations, Amos said,
and he blasted Zia with a bolt of lightning. She crashed into the souvenir table.
Hey, Carter protested. She's the enemy, Amos said, and we have enough enemies.
Carter rushed to Zia's side, naturally, while more pedestrians panicked and scattered for the edges of the square.
Sadie, Carter, Amos said, if things go bad, get to the boat and flee.
Amos, we're not leaving you, I said.
You're more important, he insisted. I can hold off Desjardins for...
Look out! Amos span his staff toward the two magicians in black. They'd been muttering spells, but Amos's gust of wind swept them off their feet, sending them swirling out of control at the center of a dust devil. They churned along the street, picking up trash, leaves, and tamales, until the miniature tornado tossed the screaming magicians over the top of a building and out of sight. On the other side of the plaza, Desjardins roared in anger.
Cain!
The chief lector slammed his staff into the ground. A crack opened in the pavement and began snaking towards us. As the crevice grew wider, the buildings trembled. Stucco flaked off the walls. The fissure would have swallowed us, but Isis's voice spoke in my mind, telling me the word I needed. I raised my wand. Quiet! Hairy! Hieroglyphs, a spiral over an open mouth, blazed to life in front of us. The fissure stopped just short of my feet. The earthquake died. Amos sucked in a breath.
Sadie, how did you... Divine worlds, Cain? Desjardins stepped forward, his face livid. The child dares speak the divine worlds. She is corrupted by Isis, and you are guilty of assisting the gods. Step off, Michelle, Amos warned.
Part of me found it amusing that Desjardins' first name was Michelle, but I was too scared to enjoy the moment.
Amos held out his wand, ready to defend us. We must stop that. If you're wise, I would what? Desjardins said. Join you? Collaborate? The gods bring nothing but destruction.
No, Zia's voice. With Carter's help, she'd somehow managed to struggle to her feet.
Master, we can't fight each other. That's not what Iskander wanted.
Iskander is dead, Desjardins bellowed. Now step away from them, Zia, or be destroyed with them.
Zia looked at Carter. Then she set her jaw and faced Desjardins.
No, we must work together.
I regarded Zia with a new respect. You really didn't lead him here.
I do not lie, she said.
Desjardins raised his staff, and huge cracks appeared in the buildings all around him. Chunks of cement and adobe brick flew at us, but Amos summoned the wind and deflected them.
Children, get out of here, Amos yelled. The other magicians won't stay gone forever.
For once, he's right, Zia warned. But we can't make a portal.
We've got a flying boat, Carter offered. Zia nodded appreciatively.
Where?
We pointed towards the church, but unfortunately Desjardins was between it and us. Desjardins hurled another volley of stones. Amos deflected them with wind and lightning.
Storm magic, Desjardins sneered. Since when is Amos Cain an expert in the powers of chaos? Do you see this, children? How can he be your protector? Shut up, Amos growled,
and with a sweep of his staff he raised a sandstorm so huge that it blanketed the entire square.
Now, Zia said.
We made a wide arc around Desjardins, then ran blindly towards the church. The sandstorm bit my skin and stung my eyes, but we found the stairs and climbed to the roof. The wind subsided, and across the plaza I could see Desjardins and Amos still facing each other, encased in shields of force. Amos was staggering. The effort was clearly taking too much out of him.
I have to help, Zia said reluctantly, or Desjardins will kill Amos.
I thought you didn't trust Amos, Carter said.
I don't, she agreed. But if Desjardins wins this duel, we're all dead. We'll never escape.
She clenched her teeth as if she were preparing for something really painful. She held out her staff and murmured an incantation. The air became warm. The staff glowed. She released it, and it burst into flame, growing into a column of fire a full meter thick and 4 meters tall.
Hunt Desjardins, she intoned. Immediately the fiery column floated off the roof and began moving slowly but deliberately towards the chief lector.
Zia crumpled. Carter and I had to grab her arms to keep her from falling on her face. Desjardins looked up. When he saw the fire, his eyes widened with fear.
Zia, he cursed. You dare attack me!
The column descended, passing through the branches of a tree and burning a hole straight through them. It landed in the street, hovering just a few centimetres above the pavement. The heat was so intense that it scorched the concrete curb and melted the tarmac. The fire came to a parked car, and instead of going round, it burned its way straight through the metal chassis, sawing the car in two.
Good, Amos yelled from the street. Well done, Zia!
In desperation, Desjardins staggered to his left. The column adjusted course. He blasted it with water, but the liquid evaporated into steam. He summoned boulders, but they just passed through the fire and dropped into melted, smoking lumps on the opposite side. "What is that thing?" I asked. Zia was unconscious, and Carter shook his head in wonder, but Isis spoke in my mind.
"A pillar of fire," she said with admiration.
"It is the most powerful spell a master of fire can summon. It is impossible to defeat, impossible to escape. It can be used to lead the summoner toward a goal, or it can be used to pursue any enemy, forcing him to run. If Desjardins tries to focus on anything else, it will overtake him and consume him. It will not leave him alone until it dissipates."
"How long?" I asked.
"Depends on the strength of the caster. Between 6 and 12 hours."
I laughed aloud. Brilliant! Of course Zia had passed out creating it, but it was still brilliant.
"Such a spell has depleted her energy," Isis said. "She will not be able to work any magic until the pillar is gone. In order to help you, she has left herself completely powerless."
"She'll be all right," I told Carter. Then I shouted down to the plaza. "Amos, come on! We've got to go!" Desjardins kept backing up. I could tell he was scared of the fire, but he wasn't quite done with us.
"You will be sorry for this. You wish to play gods. Then you leave me no choice."
Out of the duat, he pulled a cluster of sticks. No, they were arrows, about 7 of them. Amos looked at the arrows in horror.
"You wouldn't. No chief lector would ever..." "I summon Sekhmet!"
Desjardins bellowed. He threw the arrows into the air, and they began to twirl, orbiting Amos. Desjardins allowed himself a satisfied smile. He looked straight at me.
"You choose to place your faith in the gods," he called. "Then die by the hands of a god."
He turned and ran. The pillar of fire picked up speed and followed. "Children, get out of here," Amos yelled, encircled by the arrows. "I'll try to distract her." "Who?" I demanded. I knew I'd heard the name Sekhmet before, but I'd heard a lot of Egyptian names. "Which one is Sekhmet?" Carter turned to me, and even with all we'd been through over the last week, I had never seen him look so scared.
"We need to leave," he said.
"Now!"
33. We go into the salsa business. "You're forgetting something," Horace told me. "A little busy here," I thought back. "You might think it's easy steering a magic boat through the sky. You'd be wrong. I didn't have Amos's animated coat, so I stood in the back trying to shift the tiller myself, which was like stirring cement. I couldn't see where we were going. We kept tilting back and forth while Sadie tried her best to keep an unconscious Zia from flopping over the side. "It's my birthday," Horace insisted. "Wish me happy birthday." "Happy birthday," I yelled. "Now shut up." "Carter, what are you on about?" Sadie screamed, grabbing the railing with one hand and Zia with the other as the boat tipped sideways. "Have you lost your mind?" "No, I was talking to..." "Oh, forget it." I glanced behind us. Something was approaching. A blazing figure that lit up the night. Vaguely humanoid, definitely bad news. I urged the boat to go faster.
"Did you get me anything?" Horace urged.
"Will you please do something helpful?" I demanded. "That thing following us, is that what I think it is?"
"Oh," Horace sounded bored. "That's Sekhmet, the Eye of Ra, destroyer of the wicked, the great huntress, lady of flame, etc."
"Great," I thought. "And she's following us because..."
"The chief lector has the power to summon her once during his lifetime," Horace explained. "It's an old, old gift. Goes back to the days when Ra first blessed man with magic."
"Once during his lifetime," I thought. "And Desjardins chooses now?"
"He never was very good at being patient."
"I thought that the magicians don't like gods."
"They don't," Horace agreed. "Just shows you what a hypocrite he is. But I suppose killing you was more important than standing on principle. I can appreciate that."
I looked back again. The figure was definitely getting closer. A giant golden woman in glowing red armor, with a bow in one hand and a quiver of arrows slung across her back, and she was hurtling toward us like a rocket. "How do we beat her?" I asked. You pretty much don't, Horace said. She is the incarnation of the sun's wrath. Back in the days when Ra was active, she would have been much more impressive. But still, she's unstoppable. A born killer. A slaying machine.
Okay, I get it, I yelled. What? Sadie demanded, so loud that Zia stirred.
What?
Her eyes fluttered open. Nothing, I shouted. We're being followed by a slaying machine. Go back to sleep.
Zia sat up woozily.
A slaying machine? You don't mean...
Carter, veer right, Sadie yelled. I did, and a flaming arrow the size of a predator drone grazed our port side. It exploded above us, setting the roof of our boathouse on fire. I steered the boat into a dive, and Sekhmet shot past, but then pirouetted in the air with irritating agility and dove after us.
We're burning,
Sadie pointed out helpfully. Noticed, I yelled back. I scanned the landscape below us, but there was nowhere safe to land, just subdivisions and office parks.
Die, enemies of Ra! Sekhmet yelled. Perish in agony!
She's almost as annoying as you, I told Horace.
Impossible, Horace said. No one bests Horace.
I took another evasive turn, and Zia yelled, There! She pointed toward a well-lit factory complex with trucks, warehouses, and silos. A giant chili pepper was painted on the side of the biggest warehouse, and a floodlit sign read, Magic Salsa, Inc.
Oh, please, Sadie said. It's not really magic. That's just a name.
No, Zia insisted. I've got an idea.
Those seven ribbons, I guessed. The ones you used on circuit? Zia shook her head.
They can only be summoned once a year. But my plan...
Another arrow blazed past us, only inches from our starboard side. Hang on! I yanked at the tiller and spun the boat upside down just before the arrow exploded. The hull shielded us from the brunt of the blast, but the entire bottom of the ship was now on fire, and we were going down. With my last bit of control... I aimed the boat toward the roof of the warehouse, and we crashed through, slamming into a huge mound of... something crunchy. I clawed my way clear of the boat and sat up in a daze. Fortunately, the stuff we'd crashed into was soft. Unfortunately, it was a 20-foot pile of dried chili peppers, and the boat had set them on fire. My eyes began to sting, but I knew better than to rub them, because my hands were now covered in chili oil.
Sadie? I called.
Zia?
Help!
Sadie yelled. She was on the other side of the boat, dragging Zia out from under the flaming hull. We managed to pull her free and slide down the pile onto the floor. The warehouse seemed to be a massive facility for drying peppers, with 30 or 40 mountains of chilies and rows of wooden drying racks. The wreckage of our boat filled the air with spicy smoke, and through the hole we'd made in the roof, I could see the blazing figure of Sekhmet descending. We ran, plowing through another pile of peppers.
No, I didn't pick a peck of them, Sadie. Just shut up!
We hid behind a drying rack, where shelves of peppers made the air burn like hydrochloric acid. Sekhmet landed, and the warehouse floor shuddered. Up close, she was even more terrifying. Her skin glowed like liquid gold, and her chest armor and skirt seemed to be woven of tiles made from molten lava. Her hair was like a thick lion's mane. Her eyes were feline, but they didn't sparkle like Bast's or betray any kindness or humor. Sekhmet's eyes blazed like her arrows, designed only to seek and destroy. She was beautiful the way an atomic explosion is beautiful.
I smell blood, she roared. I will feast on enemies of Ra until my belly is full.
Charming, Sadie whispered.
So, Zia, this plan...
Zia didn't look so well. She was shivering and pale and seemed to have trouble focusing on us.
When he first called Sekhmet to punish humans because they were rebelling against him, she got out of hand.
Hard to imagine, I whispered, as Sekhmet ripped through the burning wreckage of our boat.
She started killing everyone, Zia said, not just the wicked. None of the other gods could stop her. She would just kill all day until she was gorged on blood. Then she'd leave until the next day. So the people begged the magicians to come up with a plan, and...
You dare hide?
Flames roared as Sekhmet's arrows destroyed pile after pile of dried peppers.
I will roast you alive!
Run now, I decided. Talk later. Sadie and I dragged Zia between us. We managed to get out of the warehouse just before the whole place imploded from the heat, billowing a spicy hot mushroom cloud into the sky. We ran through a parking lot filled with semi-trailers and hid behind a 16-wheeler. I peeked out, expecting to see Sekhmet walk through the flames of the warehouse. Instead, she leaped out in the form of a giant lion. Her eyes blazed, and floating over her head was a disk of fire like a miniature sun.
The symbol of Ra,
Zia whispered.
Sekhmet roared, Where are you, my tasty morsels?
She opened her maw and breathed a blast of hot air across the parking lot. Wherever her breath touched, the asphalt melted, cars disintegrated into sand, and the parking lot turned into barren desert.
How did she do that? Sadie hissed.
Her breath creates the deserts, Zia said. That is the legend. Better and better. Fear was closing up my throat, but I knew we couldn't hide much longer. I summoned my sword. I'll distract her. You two run.
No.
Zia insisted.
There is another way.
She pointed at a row of silos on the other side of the lot. Each one was 3 stories tall and maybe 20 feet in diameter, with a giant chili pepper painted on the side.
Petrol tanks? Sadie asked.
No, I said. Must be salsa, right? Sadie stared at me blankly.
Isn't that a type of music?
It's a hot sauce, I said. That's what they make here. Sekhmet breathed in our direction, and the 3 trailers next to us melted into sand. We scuttled sideways and jumped behind a cinder block wall.
Listen,
Zia gasped, her face beading with sweat.
When the people needed to stop Sekhmet, they got huge vats of beer and colored them bright red with pomegranate juice.
Yeah, I remember now, I interrupted. They told Sekhmet it was blood, and she drank until she passed out. Then Ra was able to recall her into the heavens. They transformed her into something gentler, a cow goddess or something.
Hathor, Zia said. That is Sekhmet's other form, the flip side of her personality.
Sadie shook her head in disbelief.
So you're saying we offer to buy Sekhmet a few pints, and she'll turn into a cow?
Not exactly. Zia said, but salsa is red, is it not? We skirted the factory grounds as Sekhmet chewed up trucks and blasted huge swaths of the parking lot to sand.
I hate this plan, Sadie grumbled.
Just keep her occupied for a few seconds, I said, and don't die.
Yeah, that's the hard bit, isn't it?
1, I counted. 2, 3! Sadie burst into the open and used her favorite spell.
Hardy!
The glyphs, a staff, an X, and a snake, blazed over Sekhmet's head. And everything around her exploded. Trucks burst to pieces. The air shimmered with energy. The ground heaved upward, creating a crater 50 feet deep into which the lioness tumbled. It was pretty impressive, but I didn't have time to admire Sadie's work. I turned into a falcon and launched myself toward the salsa tanks.
Roar!
Sekhmet leaped out of the crater and breathed desert wind in Sadie's direction, but Sadie was long gone. She ran sideways, ducking behind trailers and releasing a few lengths of magical rope as she fled. The ropes whipped through the air and tried to tie themselves around the lioness's mouth. They failed, of course, but they did annoy the destroyer.
Show yourself, Sekhmet bellowed. I will feast on your flesh.
perched on a silo. I concentrated all my power and turned straight from Falcon to Avatar. My glowing form was so heavy, its feet sank into the top of the tank. Sekhmet! I yelled. The lioness whirled and snarled, trying to locate my voice. Up here, kitty! I called. She spotted me and her ears went back. Horus! Unless you know another guy with a falcon head. She padded back and forth uncertainly, then roared in challenge.
Why do you speak to me when I am in my raging form? You know I must destroy everything in my path, even you!
If you must, I said. But first, you might like to feast on the blood of your enemies. I drove my sword into the tank, and salsa gushed out in a chunky red waterfall. I leaped to the next tank and sliced it open, and again, until 6 silofuls of magic salsa were spewing into the parking lot.
Ha ha!
Sekhmet loved it. She leaped into the red sauce torrent, rolling in it, lapping it up.
Blood! Lovely blood!
Yeah, apparently lions aren't too bright, or their taste buds aren't very developed, because Sekhmet didn't stop until her belly was bulging and her mouth literally began to smoke.
Tangy, she said, stumbling and blinking. But my eyes hurt. What kind of blood is this? Nubian? Persian?
Jalapeno, I said. Try some more. It gets better. Her ears were smoking, too, now, as she tried to drink more. Her eyes watered, and she began to stagger.
I...
Steam curled from her mouth.
Hot. Hot mouth.
Milk is good for that, I suggested. Maybe if you were a cow.
Trick!
Sekhmet groaned.
You tricked!
But her eyes were too heavy. She turned in a circle and collapsed, curling into a ball. Her form twitched and shimmered as her red armor melted into spots on her golden skin until I was looking down at an enormous, sleeping cow. I dropped off the silo and stepped carefully around the sleeping goddess. She was making cow snoring sounds like, I waved my hand in front of her face, and when I was convinced she was out cold, I dispelled my avatar. Sadie and Zia emerged from behind a trailer.
Well, said Sadie, that was different.
I will never eat salsa again, I decided.
You both did wonderfully, Zia said, but your boat is burned. How do we get to Phoenix?
We, Sadie said. I don't recall inviting you. Zia's face turned salsa red.
Surely you don't still think I led you into a trap.
I don't know, Sadie said. Did you?
I couldn't believe I was hearing this. Sadie! My voice sounded dangerously angry, even to myself. Lay off! Zia summoned that pillar of fire thing. She sacrificed her magic to save us. And she told us how to beat the lioness. We need her. Sadie stared at me. She glanced back and forth between Zia and me, probably trying to judge how far she could push things.
Fine.
She crossed her arms and pouted.
But we need to find Amos first.
No, Zia said. That would be a very bad idea.
Oh, so we can trust you, but not Amos.
Zia hesitated. I got the feeling that was exactly what she meant. But she decided to try a different approach.
Amos would not want you to wait. He said to keep going, didn't he? If he survived Sekhmet, he will find us on the road. If not,
Sadie huffed.
So how do we get to Phoenix?
Walk? I gazed across the parking lot, where 1 16-wheeler was still intact. Maybe we don't have to. I took off the linen coat I'd borrowed from Amos's supply locker. Zia, Amos had a way of animating his coat so it could steer his boat. Do you know the spell? She nodded.
It's fairly simple with the right ingredients. I could do it if I had my magic.
Can you teach me?
She pursed her lips.
The hardest part is the figurine. The first time you enchant the piece of clothing, you'd need to smash a shabti into the fabric and speak a binding charm to meld them together. It would require a clay or wax figure that has already been imbued with a spirit.
Sadie and I looked at each other and simultaneously said, Doughboy! 34. Doughboy gives us a ride. I summoned Dad's magic toolkit out of the duat and grabbed our little legless friend. Doughboy, we need to talk. Doughboy opened his wax eyes.
Finally! You realize how stuffy it is in there. At last you've remembered that you need my brilliant guidance.
Actually, we need you to become a coat, just for a while. His tiny mouth fell open.
Do I look like an article of clothing? I am the Lord of all knowledge, the mighty!
I smashed him into my jacket, wadded it up, threw it on the pavement, and stepped on it. Zia, what's that spell? She told me the words, and I repeated the chant. The coat inflated and hovered in front of me. It brushed itself off and ruffled its collar. If coats can look indignant, this one did. Sadie eyed it suspiciously. Can it drive a lorry with no feet for the pedals?
Shouldn't be a problem, Zia said. It's a nice long coat.
I sighed with relief. For a moment, I'd imagined myself having to animate my pants, too. That could get awkward. Drive us to Phoenix, I told the coat. The coat made a rude gesture at me. Or at least it would have been rude if the coat had hands. Then it floated into the driver's seat. The cab was bigger than I'd thought. Behind the seat was a curtained area with a full-size bed, which Sadie claimed immediately.
I'll let you and Zia have some quality time, she told me. Just the two of you and your coat.
She ducked behind the curtains before I could smack her. The coat drove us west on I-10 as a bank of dark clouds swallowed the stars. The air smelled like rain. After a long time, Zia cleared her throat.
Carter, I'm sorry about... I mean, I wish the circumstances were better.
Yeah, I said. I guess you'll get in a lot of trouble with the house.
I will be shunned, she said. My staff broken. My name blotted from the books. I'll be cast into exile, assuming they don't kill me.
I thought about Zia's little shrine in the first gnome, all those pictures of her village and her family that she didn't remember. As she talked about getting exiled, she had the same expression on her face that she had worn then, not regret or sadness, more like confusion, as if she herself couldn't figure out why she was rebelling or what the first gnome had meant to her. She'd said Iskandar was like her only family. Now she had no one.
You could come with us, I said.
She glanced over. We were sitting close together, and I was very aware of her shoulder pressing against mine. Even with the reek of burned peppers on both of us, I could smell her Egyptian perfume. She had a dried chili stuck in her hair, and somehow that made her look even cuter. Sadie says my brain was just addled. Seriously, Sadie, I don't interrupt this much when you're telling a story. Anyway, Zia looked at me sadly.
Where would we go, Carter? Even if you defeat Set and save this continent, what will you do? The house will hunt you down. The gods will make your life miserable.
We'll figure it out, I promised. I'm used to traveling. I'm good at improvising, and Sadie's not all bad.
I heard that.
Sadie's muffled voice came through the curtain. And with you, I continued, I mean, you know, with your magic, things would be easier. Zia squeezed my hand, which sent a tingle up my arm.
You're kind, Carter, but you don't know me.
Not really.
I suppose Iskandar saw this coming.
What do you mean? Zia took her hand away, which kind of bummed me out.
When Desjardins and I came back from the British Museum, Iskandar spoke to me privately. He said I was in danger. He said he would take me somewhere safe and...
Her eyebrows knit together.
That's odd. I don't remember. A cold feeling started gnawing at me. Wait, did he take you somewhere safe?
I think so.
She shook her head. No, he couldn't have, obviously. I'm still here. Perhaps he didn't have time. He sent me to